Hello and welcome to the Geek and Dream Podcast. I'm Jeremy Pappas, alongside, as always, the man who was really in the running to be the next Doctor Who, but isn't because they cast some old guy, Mr. Russell Jones. Russell.
Man, and I had Sonic everything.
Yeah.
It was going to be awesome. Yeah. My ideas for the new season, it was going to be, you remember that one episode in the Wild West? Instead of going to the Wild West, we'd have gone to Deadwood. So it would have been a Doctor Who Deadwood crossover.
I think they don't. I don't think they do enough HBO crossovers.
No, they really don't.
I think it'd be. I think it'd be daring.
Yeah.
Because it's not TV. It's HBO.
Could you imagine Al Swearengen getting his hands on the TARDIS?
Not without laughing.
That's where we would leave it. Al Swearengen getting his hands on the TARDIS, and it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah. What's happening?
Oh, quite a bit. I am neck deep in the middle of playing Saints Row 4, yes, before it is out, so that I can get my review ready to go up on Tuesday, and having a grand old time. It's pretty damn ridiculous. If you've played any of the Saints Row series, you know that things are just really over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And this is absolutely no exception. They're taking everything that's been happening in Saints Row the Third and basically just, we're like, one-upping it.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. But it's fun. And it's funny. There was one part where the alien overlord quotes Hamlet to you and you tell him Jane Austen or get the fuck out.
The Saints Row games are great. I played quite a bit of Saints Row 3. Saints Row 3 or Saints Row 2?
Saints Row the Third, yeah.
Yeah, I think
that was that was the one that took place in Steelport and was, like, really ridiculous and over the top. Uh-huh. Saints Row 1 and Saints Row 2 were kind of more dramatic and more, from what I understand, along the lines of, you know, a gangland Grand Theft Auto.
Okay, so maybe I played Saints Row 2. But it was still pretty ridiculous. Despite being, it had a lot to harken back to Grand Theft Auto, but it was still pretty ridiculous. There was still some crazy stuff that happened. At one point in time, you had to get like a sewage truck and spray shit all over a lot of things, and
yep.
It was pretty, it was pretty wacky. So
one of the things that I like a lot about Saints Row 4, that they've really been known for their character customization as well, you know, the ability to really do anything. And one of the things that they added in this time are gun costumes. So instead of just, you know, you have a pistol and you can increase the capabilities of the pistol, you can also swap out what that pistol looks like. And then once you change the overall look of the pistol, you can also, you know, make that pistol look a little different. So for instance, you have the rifle, which is like an assault rifle, and you can turn it into a super soaker. But not only that, you can turn it into like a camouflage super soaker, a Saints Row blinged out super soaker.
Right.
It's just, it's really fun because there are guns that I would never use. Like I would never use like the MAC-10 or the submachine gun, essentially. Even though you could dual wield submachine guns, I barely use them because the pistols in Saints Row the Third were just, they were Halo levels of power.
Uh-huh.
They were really damn good. And, you know, solid headshots all over the place. I didn't ever have to worry about anything. But when I realized that you could change out the gun costume for the submachine guns to make them look like RoboCop's gun, I was like, nope, I'm not using anything else.
And then we're finished.
Yeah. You can change the rocket launcher to look like the guitar case from Desperado.
I want to say it's either Desperado or Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
I know that they use the rocket launcher specifically in Desperado.
So there are a lot of, it harkens back to a lot of,
oh yeah, there are references everywhere to anything that you can think of out of pop culture. The Matrix, obviously, because this is taking place in a big alien simulation.
Uh-huh.
There's a ton of different kinds of references to media that you wouldn't even, you know, like Jane Austen.
Right.
Because they name check Jane Austen. And it's just, it's an insane amount of fun that I can't really talk anymore because it's under embargo until Tuesday. Review goes up on Tuesday. and then a week after that is when the game comes out. But this is one, this is kind of, we're leaving the doldrums of summer, and we're really entering the hardcore review season, starting with Saints Row 4. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I recently picked up a 3DS XL. I've been playing it quite a bit and greatly enjoying it.
You picked up Scribblenauts, right?
I did get Scribblenauts, yes, among a few other games, but Scribblenauts was one of the very first that I had ever really, really wanted to play for the Wii and for the DS. So I was like, man, we're going to get Scribblenauts. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, talk about the different ways that you... How do you get a cat out of a tree?
Well, if you're not familiar with Scribblenauts, you're essentially you're a little guy named Maxwell, and you can draw. By way of drawing, you have to write out certain things to accomplish certain usually rather mundane tasks. So, but you have to do the. You'll go and there. It'll be like one task was. There were some ants, and there's a hill, and there's a sandwich on the hill, and there's a hippie. And the goal is, and they refer to him as a hippie, like he's a hippie. The goal is to protect the sandwich from the ants, but without hurting the ants, which will make the hippie mad. So the first thing I do, of course, is I like build walls around the sandwich. And then the ants can't get in, and I win. Then you have to come up with two other ways of doing the exact same thing without using the same items. So one I used a cage, and I put the sandwich in a cage, mm-hmm. which kept it away from the ants. And then the third, what did I do for the third? I don't recall. But it's really about. Really out of the box problem solving. Getting a cat out of a tree, of course, you can burn the tree down or chop the tree down, which works. You can just fly up there and grab the cat and pull the cat down, which also works. Or you can just create a firefighter and let the firefighter do it for you, which is exactly which is the first thing I did. So you really learn a lot about yourself when you're doing it, because you look at it and you kind of think, oh wow, that's that I didn't think that I would come up with something that and it's really it's difficult to do certain really simple tasks sometimes. So it was a fun game. It is a lot of fun to play. I've put several hours into it now, despite, you know, having had it now for just a day or so. So yeah, it's been fun.
I'm really jealous primarily because the 3DS has a very, very, very strong library right now. And I think it's safe to say that it's easily Nintendo's strongest property for the moment.
I think
it's going to stay that way for quite some time. But I'm jealous because the 3DS has a game coming, Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds,
uh-huh.
which is a spiritual successor to The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, uh-huh. which is from NES. And it's basically a remake of that, but the game itself is taking place like 1,000 years in the future. And apparently the world of Hylia has not changed a whole lot. But you're essentially doing the same thing with some minor tweaks. Like Link can flatten himself against the wall and become like a mosaic on the wall. And then travel along the wall collecting coins and things. And it really changes how you go through dungeons. All of the dungeons are completely rethought. And they were showing off some footage on the Nintendo Direct call this week, or press conference. And they were showing, you know, different things and talking about it. This is where you learn that Link is actually, you know, a descendant or another Link, you know, 1,000 years after the former hero who saved Hyrule with the Triforce. And it looks really impressive, and mm-hmm. it's the kind of Zelda game that makes me really want to buy a 3DS. And that's always been, you know, that's kind of the led to what I think is the main thing with console selling, is that there are certain games mm-hmm. that will make you buy a console. And for me, Zelda is one of those games. Because at some point, I looked at the Wii and I was like, I know I'm going to have to buy you at some point. Mm-hmm. Not because Home Run Derby on Wii Sports was ridiculously fun. It was. But because you can use a sword in Legend of Zelda, there's a Shadow Princess, mm-hmm. and yeah, I'm Twilight Princess, and I'm just gonna have to, get that at some point, because I'm gonna have to, because it's Zelda, and that's my weakness.
Yeah.
And I'm that way with the 3DS. I don't have the money, and I'm not gonna be able to, because I have a PS4 pre-ordered, but, you know, yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, it really, I'm not a console, normally a console overall player. I've bought and owned consoles, and I usually end up selling them. But I want to say right around Gen Con, we were talking about Nintendo and how people had started to sort of dog Nintendo. And as we had talked about it, the more I sort of realized what Nintendo was doing is the same thing they were doing with the Wii, which was they were going in a place that people... Nintendo moves forward. It moves ahead of everybody and lets them catch up. Now, that's very dangerous, because if you move ahead of everybody and you move somewhere they're not going to go, you're screwed. But Nintendo, I mean, that's what they did with the Wii. If you would have said, you know, before the Wii came out, that Nintendo was going to come out with a console that does not have really super great graphics and is geared toward getting your mom and your grandmother and your little brother all to play together, everyone would have said, what? What? But what happens? They do that, and it becomes ridiculously wildly popular and makes tons and tons and gobs and tons of money. Yeah. So they clearly know what they're doing. Well, as we talked about it more, the more I realize that I really think they're pushing for mobile. I really think they're pushing for handheld. I guess handheld, because mobile is something different. They're really pushing for handheld. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, it wouldn't be bad to have a little case with a Game Boy in it that I could pop out and play instead of running down the battery on my phone, either reading something or surfing the web or playing a game on my phone. It'd be really nice to be able to pop out an actual console and play it. And you get the 3DS. The one thing I've noticed about the 3DS... at least 3DS games, is that they're expensive. I like to buy games used, and I've gone to all the GameStops, and there's not much difference between used games and new games as far as prices are concerned. Now, I maybe I'm going to the wrong places, but I've gone practically everywhere in town, and the games are pretty highly priced. I still need to check online, which is probably where I'll buy the majority of my games. So that's a little annoying.
Well, you're talking about 3DS games, right?
Yeah.
And those are usually around what, $35, $40?
They're usually around $35 new, and going into and, but it's weird when you go and buy an Xbox 360 game and you go to sell it back a week later, you're going to sell it back for what, like 50% of what you paid for it?
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere around in there. You're seeing 3DS. There are DS games, specifically the Mario games. There are DS games. They're still selling for full price, used. This was the case in the specific used game shops. This was the case in GameStop, and in some cases they would have a new version of the game that was $35, and they'd have a used version of the game that's $35. Like, I was really hoping the used game market would be stronger, but it's not. At least it's not in person. I'm sure online I'll be able to find a couple of deals, but you know, it's been a lot of fun. I picked up Street Fighter 4 3D mobile or handheld edition, whatever they call them. I picked up Street Fighter 4. It's awesome. It's just like the console. I mean, there's, and it's 3D, which I can actually see, amazingly enough.
Yeah, because you have a problem seeing 3D.
I do. It's the 3D without glasses. I think my range is a little shorter, like the side-to-side range. I really have to be dead set in the middle to see it properly. But it's pretty cool. I spent, I don't know how many hours yesterday just playing Street Fighter. And going through the story mode, and you can play online, and it's a lot of fun. I'm really greatly enjoying it, and we'll continue to buy games and play whatever comes out. I'm interested in Luigi's Mansion. I'm hearing really good things about it,
yeah.
So I'm interested to see.
Yeah, our 3DS reviewer for VideoGameWriters.com is in Australia. And she's a big Japanese fan. She's actually doing a PhD over anime and manga, and she travels to Japan pretty frequently and is fluent in Japanese. And so she has a pretty good relationship with Nintendo over there, and she gets quite a bit of 3DS stuff.
That's nice. So
I think she has about like three different 3DSs.
Well, and that was something, because I was completely new to this whole process. That was something I didn't realize, is you have the DS, you have the DS XL, you have the DSi. I'm not entirely certain what that is. Then you have the 3DS. You have another version of the 3DS. I think there's a 3DSi, and then you have the 3DS XL. Which is what I actually picked up. Another thing, the 3DS XL is really big, to a point where I don't think children could use it, which was basically Nintendo looking at me and going, "You're a big dude, you have big hands. Here's a big handheld." I'm like, "Okay, Nintendo, I'm with you." It's good. It looks good. It plays really well. It has some really cool features. Features which I will likely never use. It has features where if you're walking by somebody and you have your 3DS with you, you'll like trade things and battle things and
your street passes and everything.
Yeah, it has the Mii support just like a Wii, and it's cool. I've been enjoying what I've played. I also got what's the other? I have Mario Kart for it plays DS games as well as 3DS games, so it's been fun. I'm gonna continue to enjoy it, I'm sure.
Yeah, we sold back our DS and the games that we had had. Macy loved Professor Layton, and I used it to occasionally get the Pokemon fix so that I could play a bit of Pokemon, and then eventually reach the point where I go, "Oh yeah, this is a traditional Japanese RPG, and it's going to grind it down." So I'm good now. I have caught some of them all. I have not caught them all.
But you have to good. See. I've always wondered, or I've always thought that that Pokemon should come out with a Pokemon called Amal. That way, it completely changes.
I caught them all.
It should be the penultimate Pokemon. Just to kind of just
you name them. So you could name yours Amal.
That's true.
A Pokemon Amal. So you caught them all. Yes, right. I did. It's like,
yes,
you.
I did.
Pokemon, right.
That's I've always had that thought that they should legitimately come out with a Pokemon named Amal and make it like the Mew or the Mewtwo of, I guess the Mew of this generation of Pokemon players, just to kind of say, you know, we've been telling you since the very beginning that you gotta catch them all. Now here's Amal, you better catch him.
Yep. And he's like ridiculously super hard.
Yeah.
I was just reading that they have a new type of evolution coming up, Mega Evolutions, which immediately people started were like looking askance at Digimon, being like, "Did they rip you guys off just a little tiny bit?"
Yeah.
Digimon.
Digital monsters.
I remember Digimon.
Yeah, everyone. It was a little weird. All of the names ended in Mon. I got kind of annoying.
Digital monsters, pocket monsters,
right?
All that.
Right. Yeah, man, it's still going strong. I was in the used game shop, and there were copies of Pokemon Snap that were still like $15-$20.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeesh.
That's still pretty good.
Well, Felicia Day and her brother Brian
Just played
co-opted with Snap, so that may be driving some sales.
Yeah, well, this was a pretty, I mean, they had two or three copies that were, and I've seen it before that. I mean, you get these like getting a copy of GoldenEye, you could pay $30-$40 for a copy of GoldenEye.
Oh yeah. Especially if you get into, you know, the whole GoldenEye with all its stuff in the box and, you know, the certain cartridges of GoldenEye that you get. Like, my brother bought, he was a big, big Chrono Trigger fan. Like, around the time PlayStation 2 was going really strong, he got into a big retro craze. And because you could go to Game Exchange and buy, like, a regular Nintendo for, like, a little tiny amount. So he bought that. And then he got, Super Nintendo. What am I saying? Chrono Trigger. Anyway, he got Chrono Trigger, and he paid to get an online, you know, off eBay. He got a full-sized everything. He got the original box. He got the original maps. They were in good condition. They weren't in, like, pristine condition. And he paid, like, God, I don't know, like, 60 money. Bucks, 70 yeah. bucks? Paid quite a bit, but it was Chrono Trigger, and it was all that stuff. And he was like, you know, this is a collector's item. And I said, well, sort of, because you're taking it out and playing with it.
Yeah.
You know, look at the thing. But, you know, it's a touchstone.
Yeah. The concept of antique electronics is, I mean, something we, as a society, will have to deal with. I mean... In 30 years, you're going to have people that are buying, the original iPhone, and sure, they'll be replacing the hardware with the latest, you know, iPhone, I guess, 35. They'll be replacing the internal hardware, but they want that, you know, they'll want that look, or they'll use it just as a, or it'll be a, you know, maybe not the iPhone, since there were some iPhones
made. I'm thinking that we'll see eventually kind of a throwback nostalgia style to the Razer flip phones and those kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Except they're going to have like full smartphone touchscreen functionality, and that's probably by the time that happens, we'll have folding screens. So
yeah,
that's kind of what I see. Whereas instead of just one entire half of the phone is taken up by a punch pad, you have just full touchscreen on both phones.
Mm-hmm.
Or holographic displays by then. Who knows?
It'll be the year 2015 with your hover jets and your boards and all of these things. Holographic Jaws 34.
Oh, yeah. I was speaking of sort of retro gaming last month. Can you tell me what the highest selling game for the PlayStation Network was?
For the PlayStation Network last month?
Yeah, for the PlayStation Online buy-in.
Yeah, deal. The PSN store. It's got to be a Metal Gear something, God.
Nope.
Really?
Yep.
What was it?
Shadow of the Colossus.
Fucking, I've never played that, and I feel bad. I have not played that.
It knocked The Last of Us out of the top spot. It's a PS2 game. It went on sale for $10.
Yeah, that would do it.
And
if I could get Last of Us for $10, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
No, Shadows of Colossus was on $10.
If I get Last of Us for $10, I'd also do that.
Well, right. But yeah, Shadow, they put it on sale for $10, and it became the top grossing game of the month. So
that would do it.
I mean, that's pretty, you know, once you get your price point down there, that's pretty good. That is pretty good.
Yeah, you have, now that things have kind of gotten to the point that they are with digital sales, you've got everyone that is now slowly adopting the mm-hmm. Steam model to that. Because mm-hmm. you've got Xbox had their days of summer sale and they were selling stuff. Now they, you know, they finally reached the point with Xbox Live where you buy almost tons of digital library stuff online and download that directly to the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to continue with the next Xbox because you've got a ton of, you know, downloadable stuff you can buy. That's going to be probably how I play Last of Us, is I'm going to get the PlayStation 4 and I'm going to download Last of Us off the store
mm-hmm.
so that I can finally try it. And so far, believe it or not, I have remained unspoiled to The Last of Us. I keep seeing stuff about the ending.
Uh-huh.
I have hints of what's going to happen, but they're the kind of hints that, oh, I kind of figured that was how the ending was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
just based on the level of hype.
Well, A, based on the level of hype, but B, based on the kind of story that they're telling,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially when you've done the kind of storytelling that we've done for as long as you've done it, and you've seen the kind of stuff that we see and you consume the kind of media, you get, it's like, oh, this is that kind of story. This
right.
is that archetype.
Right.
Looking at this archetype, there are certain specific endings, and it's like A, B, or C. So it's like, oh, it sounds like they're hinting towards A.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that I know. I don't know anything else.
Well, that's good.
And I have managed to stay spoiler-free, and I hopefully will continue to stay that way until I can finally get it.
That's
but it's interesting that I'm going to be torn between playing an actual next-gen launch title like Watch Dogs, or if I'm going to play Last of Us as the first game that I play on it. Because it's such a strong Game of the Year contender that I need to try that for,
oh, yeah.
for Game of the Year.
Yeah. Speaking of storytelling, a game that if you are a frequent listener to the podcast, you know Russell and I are both very fond of, which is Star Wars Edge of the Empire by Fantasy Flight Games. They have announced, by they I mean Fantasy Flight Games, has announced their next in the three-part Star Wars role-playing game series known as Star Wars Age of Rebellion. Now, our Edge of the Empire game continues unabated.
Yep.
Having
despite
lots of
my best efforts.
Despite Russ's best efforts. No, it's been a great game. It's been a lot of fun. And I've really taken a shine to the system. I applaud Fantasy Flight in doing everything that they're doing. And if you're a Star Wars fan and you're a tabletop role-playing game fan, you should be at your store right now buying this game, because this comes from someone who's played the other Star Wars role-playing games.
Yeah, the old West End Games D6 version.
Yeah, and I played the Wizards version as well. Star Wars, the Star Wars Universe game.
Yeah, the
D6
system.
It's so much more Star Wars-y, which is a term I use quite a bit. It's really Star Wars-y, which is really nice.
Star Wars-ian?
It's very Star Wars-y. And the next product is Rebel Alliance, Age of Rebellion, which focuses on the Rebel Alliance. Edge of the Empire focuses on your smugglers and your fringers and all those folks. Your Han
Solo. Bounty hunters and outlaw types.
Yeah, your Han Solo types, your Boba Fett types. Age of Rebellion will focus on your Princess Leia's, your pre-Jedi Luke Skywalker's,
your
Wedge Antilles.
Yeah.
Your Porkins.
Your pork eye.
Yeah, your Porkinses. Your Porkinses.
Yeah.
What does that got in its Porkinses? which, you know, it's the thing that I really applaud Fantasy Flight Games for doing is something it's one of those things that you're like, well, yeah, a company should do that, but they never will. They haven't jumped fully. They're saving Jedi for last. They haven't jumped with both feet into the Jedi pool yet. There's Force sensitivity in Edge of the Empire. There's apparently also a slight bump forward in Force sensitivity in Age of Rebellion, according to the official announcement, which I'll link on the podcast page. They've talked about it. They've got the beta book out. It will be able to run alongside Edge of the Empire, if that's what you're playing.
Yeah, and that's kind of their whole point, is they have these three books planned. The Edge book, which is about the Fringers. The Age book, which is about the Rebellion and the Rebel Alliance. And then the last book, which Jeremy has a very good title for, if they're listening.
Power of the Force.
Yep. Edge, Age, and Power. You got Power of the Force, possibly, you know, whatever the third book is going to be. And they're all going to be interchangeable, mm-hmm. even though they don't have the exact same, you know, names for their systems, so they don't work exactly the same. The base mechanics, the frame that they weld mm-hmm. all the stuff onto is going to be the same. The dice mechanics work the same. The class system works the same. XP works the same. Combat essentially works the same. One of the changes that they talked about for Age is kind of partly a role-playing thing, but also a game structure thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing Edge of the Empire, your characters have obligation. It is a combination of background and storytelling, as well as in-game kind of mechanics to help figure out what's going on. When you have obligation, it takes the form of like a debt, or a criminal obligation if you have a bounty on your head, or maybe a family obligation if you're mm-hmm. trying to, you know, make those credits to send to the family back home.
So, or you're obsessed with somebody, so it can be part of your actual...
Right, right.
Or you're obsessed with something, so it can be part of your actual character as opposed to just part of your background.
Exactly.
That gives you a little more flexibility in that range.
And it has a numerical value attached to it depending on how big that obligation mm-hmm. is. So a small obligation might be 5, a bigger obligation might be 10, and a really, really big obligation might be 15.
Right.
And at the beginning of the session, from a gaming standpoint, the GM rolls percentile die after making a chart with everyone's obligation listed on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he rolls within the range of one of those obligations, then that person's obligation is going to trigger that for that time. It could be something as simple as, oh, this particular thing is weighing heavy on you, you know, you're stressed out. Or it could be something, you know, specific. You know, you get a call from a family member who says they need help.
if you don't help them, your obligation increases a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because obligation is not meant to be a burden, but it's meant to at least weigh on you.
Right.
And it's meant to, you know, represent the stuff that you have to deal with being out in this galaxy. And you can actually take on additional obligation if you want by taking on like a debt,
or you can be forced to take on obligation by the DM. The good thing about obligation is it's like a DM tool. The DM is basically given these little story hooks crop up, and they sort of have to deal with it. Now, a DM could always just skip rolling obligation if they just literally cannot make it work. If you're on Dagobah and the diplomat's family obligation crops up, it might be a little difficult to realistically make that happen without saying, oh, you end up on a you run into a gang of bandits who are members of the blah 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 corporate. So you can always skip it if need be, but it gives your DM a tool to really keep everything focused on the players, which a lot of DMs have problems with, present company excluded. But a lot of DMs have a problem with, they get their grand scheme DMs.
Yeah,
they get into their brain and they say, oh, we're going to do this. We're going to go here. And I really want to get the players here because I think it'll be awesome. And they kind of ignore what the players want to do. So that really starts to kind of tie it back. The thing about the Fantasy Flight Star Wars games that I really dig is this concept of the three different books, because it's like you're giving major, like huge categories, right? You have the three books, which can all work together, and then they will open up, I'm assuming Age of Rebellion is going to work a lot like, and going to be structured a lot like Edge of the Empire. You can decide what sort of character you want to play. So if you want to play Han Solo, say one person wants to play Han Solo, one person wants to play Princess Leia, and one person wants to play Luke Skywalker, the Jedi. You have the three books. They all sort of open up as you move down. Well, Han Solo is going to be under this classification of an outworlder, and he's going to be a smuggler. And Princess Leia is going to be a politician / leader, and she's going to be whatever. It kind of falls down, which I like.
Exactly. And with her specifically, you could play it either way. If you wanted to play Leia as she appeared like in the very first Star Wars, you could play the spy Leia. And then later you could play the diplomat Leia, because like the spy is going to be an example of one of the types of characters you can play in Age of Rebellion.
Uh-huh.
A spy for the Rebellion, gathering intelligence, and it has various talent trees that go with that. The diplomat Leia could be a colonist diplomat, you know, or a colonial politician, which is under Edge of the Empire, because the way Edge works is, you know, those are thought to be like your small world mayors and governors movers and shakers.
Yeah, galactic senators and things like that.
Right, who are out in the, you know, out on the edge of the world, bringing a little bit of the core to you. So you could really play her in either one of those ways, or, and this is the thing that's interesting, possibly both, because the way the experience system works is it's all, you know, there are no levels. You just pay experience to buy things off these trees, and you can also pay experience to buy new trees that are outside your class. So you could start off as a diplomat, as a spy. Well, let's say spy. You start off as a spy in Age of Rebellion. And then you decide that you want to pick up some really gadgety kind of stuff. Your spy is a very, you know, gadget-oriented spy, and there's not a tree that specifically works for you. You could possibly go back to Edge, pay some experience, and buy one of the trees, the Gadgeteer tree out of the Bounty Hunter tree, or possibly even one of the Outlaw Tech tree from the Technician, which would be a very, very interesting kind of character,
right?
You know?
It really lets you create a character that you want to create that's really Star Warsy.
Right. So what this book does, even if you don't want to play specifically, you know, Rogue Squadron or
But you could play Rogue Squadron.
And that's the other – I'm going to talk about that in a second because that's really exciting for me. But you could, if you're playing an edge game and you're like, we really love the edge game, we want to stick with the edge game, this book has a ton of stuff in it that almost certainly will be added into your game that you could pull from if you wanted to. You could have someone that's a former soldier who buys parts of this soldier tree. You know, if you wind up occasionally helping out a small rebel squad or a small rebel cell, then you might, you know, get some training from them and buy certain things from them. There's certain equipment that they have that you wouldn't have access to that's out of this book. It's that level of, you know, working together that I think is fantastic. But yeah, as far as what kinds of games you could play in Age of Rebellion, I am very, very, very intrigued to see how they handle the Rogue Squadron question. Because they specifically mentioned in there, you could play a squad of X-Wing pilots going out and doing your thing. And I was like, yes, yes, that is what I want. Mm-hmm. But space combat rules are kind of squidgy a little bit. In Edge, you're primarily dealing with a single crew on a small ship.
Right.
How is it going to handle when you have like five players and they all have their own individual ships they have to keep track of and use? I've considered behind the screen a little bit for our game. We have a very strong smuggler pilot, but we also have someone else who also has a piloting skill. And I've been really tempted to drop, you know, like a small starfighter, like a Z-95 Headhunter or something in your path, just to see if someone might be interested in saying, well, why don't you three hang out on the freighter? I'm going to take this starfighter and run interference for you. A little Smokey and the Bandit style. That's what I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if... I was going to possibly throw that into our game because we're also playing kind of a Dukes of Hazzard style game. That's gotten a little more epic than Dukes of Hazzard, but when we get back to that specific style, that was something that I wanted to throw out there as a possibility.
It's interesting.
But that sounds like what they're tackling head on with Age.
Yeah, I mean,
the ability to have an entire squadron of pilots, which I think is fascinating.
Which is really good, and it shows that I think, and we're not paid by Fantasy Flight Games, by the way. It sort of started sounding like a commercial. We just really greatly enjoy both Star Wars and the Edge of the Empire stuff.
This is like the absolute geek out in terms of, you know, tabletop role playing and Star Wars.
Yeah, it fits really well together. Ship combat in Edge of the Empire is kind of weak because it's very regimented. You're supposed to be all on one ship. And there's supposed to be something for everyone to do, but at the end of the day, there's not. I mean, you're basically pushing the same buttons, which is the only way you can do it without, you know, it's very regimented. You get in there, and especially if your character that's just not something that they do. If your character's a soldier and he likes to kill people with gaffy sticks, he's pointless. I mean, he just sits there and he'll push the button and hope that he hits something.
Right.
And occasionally you still get a little bit lucky. But it's one of those things that's just very regimented. It feels to me a lot like skill challenges from 4th edition where it was really just everyone sitting around the table rolling a dice for one specific skill and doing it over and over again and praying that the dice fall the right way. Sort of the same way, which... Again, I don't see any better way they could have done it since you're all on a ship that has a certain, you know, amount of things that it can do. You can't just say, oh, well, your ship can, you can hang out the airlock and swing at it with your gaffy stick. Like, that just doesn't work. I realize that.
Or find a way to make things board your ship so that they can swing at the gaffy stick, you know?
Right. Which, it just isn't gonna, it just doesn't happen. So, that's, I think, a necessary lacking, which I think is good that they're going into Age of Rebellion now, because then you'll be able to get your TIE fighter types who really want to make that space combat something less of a skills challenge and more of a of actual combat, being able to fly around and pew 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 at people and talk to Red Leader, and you know, that I think will be really cool.
Oh yeah, and that's the kind of game that I would like to play specifically. I'm going into Age of Rebellion. Think about what you see when it comes to the Rebel Alliance in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You primarily see, you know, the Rebellion flying and taking on the Death Star with the Battle of Yavin. And then you see the Rebellion taking part in the Battle for Hoth on the ground and getting mm-hmm. their asses kicked.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the Rebel fleet going after the second Death Star for the Battle of Endor. They really are strongest in space, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I'd like to see. And I think that they have some other options to do some kind of unexplored stuff, the way you do in the other games. Like, I played a Spec Ops agent in a previous game, and that was kind of fun. But I just really, I'm really looking forward to seeing how they move forward the space combat rules and adapt them for an entire, you know, squadron of fighters. I think that that's going to be kind of the way that we've taken Obligation and really used it in a very solid way to represent that idea of, you know, how is this smuggler getting around with his, you know, debt to Jabba over his head, which I think is a real big element of that. I think that taking, you know, space combat is going to be to the next level is going to be what you really have to see coming out of Age.
And then they'll nail when they get into Power of the Force. Then you'll really nail the you'll really nail the Jedi thing, which again I'm glad they've held off on, and the reason is this: the Star Wars universe, if you really look at it like a nerd, which you should, is so much bigger than just the Force. The Force is a big part of it, and the Jedi are a big part of it, but it's so much bigger than just the Force. The Empire, the Rebellion, the Sith, it's all very interesting, and you have so many people that are fans of what they believe Star Wars to be, which is, and that's pretty much all.
Yeah.
I'm really, and there's nothing wrong with that. The Jedi are by far the most popular part of Star Wars, and it's a great space, knights in space with glowing swords is a great concept. I like Jedi as much as the next guy. However, I know that you give people the option to do Jedi straight away, and that's the only thing you're going to have. You're going to have 800 Jedi, and you're going to have the one person who's like, hey, I read one of the Star Wars novels one time, and I want to play a soldier. And they're like, screw you. Bryong, yang, yang. So, laser, I'm really glad.
GTFO.
Exactly. Get a lightsaber. Get out. This is a lightsaber club.
This is how my first Star Wars role-playing experience went. I jumped into the middle of the game. And they were bringing me in, and I was like, oh, this is my Spec Ops agent. And I walked into the room so that the DM could introduce me to, you know, the cast and the rest of the game. And, like, one of them was floating in a chair. The other one was standing upside down on the ceiling. And
just,
the other...
Just be a Jedi. Just
and the other Jedi. One was, like, using the Force to manipulate stock prices on the other side of the universe.
I got a sandwich. You could just use your head for that.
It's like if the people... If the guys from Full Frontal Nerdity, the comic done by the guy who does Nodwick, if those guys, those players, were playing in a Star Wars game, that was my first experience of Star Wars role-playing games.
Yeah, that's funny. I kind of want to play this. What? No Force user? Get out!
Yeah.
So anyway, go to Fantasy Flight. I'm going to link this this article on their website. Read all about Age of Rebellion. If it doesn't get you interested in Edge of the Empire, maybe you're just not a Star Wars guy. I hate.
And see, you can get the beta book now.
Yeah, you can buy the beta book right now for 30 bucks.
Yeah, which is actually... That's like half the price of what the regular book costs.
Which you'll
like
still
the,
have to
the
buy.
The full-on hardcover, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're, you know, if it's anything like Edge, it's going to be a while before they put the other one.
Oh, yeah.
So.
We started our game with the beta book.
Yeah.
So. But we do need to wrap this up. We actually are going to start a D&D Next playtest game here in just a little bit. And you'll probably hear more about that on the podcast. But we kind of want to give you a little bit of a shorter podcast to get you through the week. As always, our music is Out Prop featuring Esset. Check them out on uhort.no. Check us out on Twitter. We are at GIRpodcast. You can also shoot us an email to GIRpodcast@gmail.com. For Russell, this is Jeremy. Thanks for listening.
The voice is strong with this one and that one over. Oh, come on.